out there in music video land, welcome to another episode of your favorite podcast, Music Video Chats Podcast, brought to you by your super good friends at IMVDB, the Internet Music Video Database. My name is Doug Klinger. I host this show. Everyone likes me. And this is the part of the show where I talk by myself. And then very soon, right now, we introduce our band leader, North of the Wall, from Fringe Music Fix, Mr. Adam Alexander. Adam, how's it going?
Great. Happy to be here.
Good. That's exciting. That seemed really genuine. I believe you. we're really excited because for our third episode of the Music Video Chats podcast, we have three guests with us, which we did intentionally. So next week we'll have four, and you know, by week 10 it's going to be a little nuts. This week we have director Phil Mucci on with us, and we also have Ian Mackey. I can't believe I forgot already what you told me, if it was Mackey or McKay.
It's Mackey. But,
okay, good. I got it right. Ian Mackey and Elena Savastikova, all of which are people who worked this week on the fantastic music video for Annihilation Affair by Torch. Guys, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, normally I would have you each... Being saying that you're happy to be here individually, but I decided that I would have it all happen at once. This is really exciting. Phil, we've talked to you on the blog before. We've had you on some commentaries before, but I feel like the podcast is probably the best place to like really be able to dig into the Phil Mucci style, because it's pretty famous at this point to us over here at IMVDB. We get really excited when your videos come out, and we like it's the best, because like we know some of what we're in for, but we also don't know anything of what we're in for, and that's really exciting. So I wanted to kind of just start, Phil, with you, just to kind of retread some of the places that we've gone before, but just kind of tell us about where this style of yours came from.
Okay, sure, yeah. Kind of began in 2011 with the Opeth video I did, which was the first one that I got to do where I got pretty much creative license. The band wasn't going to be in it, had no interest in being in it. It was 6 minutes long, so the label knew that, you know, there's a lot of content to fill. So I kind of got let loose on that video, and that one was kind of the one that opened my eyes. Before that, just to back up a little bit, I had, you know, moved to LA to direct my first feature. That fell through. My manager turned me on to the music video department at Anonymous Content. I started, like everybody who's brand new, just writing treatment after treatment after treatment for music videos I had no chance of ever actually getting. And finally, in the end, got my first music video with Hailstorm, which was a band I had shot publicity stills for. So, the first few videos were very much typical label stuff, you know, performance, narrative, lots of management input on the edit, and a lot of vanity issues to deal with, you know, band performance. So when I got to Opeth, it was a huge relief, because I didn't know how much longer I could actually like be fulfilled doing what I was doing, at least in music videos, because the movie world, I have plenty of meetings and I go and, you know, and I develop projects over and over again. And it just becomes pure frustration, where if you're not an established name and there's not a lot of money already behind you, projects mostly fall through. So after Opeth, the videos became to me kind of like an actual creative outlet. Like I realized like I wasn't just treading water as a filmmaker. I had now a chance to do stuff that, related to me and the things that I enjoyed. And the trick was that in the dark sort of world of music, the heavy metal ghetto, as they call it, you don't have the kind of budgets that you would get, you know, for, you know, more popular acts or other genres of music. I mean, metal is still not even, or even alternative heavy music is still not even really, you know, properly respected in general in the music industry, in the music video kind of world. So the budgets were small, and the technique kind of was born out of me not giving up on the concepts that I wanted to portray and just finding ways technically to execute them without breaking the bank, which mostly meant that I had to learn how to do almost every part of the music video process on my own so that I could keep my limited budget sort of on the screen or in the video rather than have a huge crew that supported me, you know, and used up a lot of the money. So, I mean, it wasn't like the point that I guess I'm trying to make is that it wasn't necessarily a deliberate like thought, like, you know what? I'm going to start making heavy metal fucking cartoons. That's what I'm going to do. God damn it. It wasn't like that at all. It was like, here's an opportunity. We only have this much money. You don't have to put the band in it. You can do whatever the hell you want. And me being the kind of guy who just could not say no to that, you know, and then just figuring out how to do it.
And then from that point, did you kind of like hit a eureka moment, or was it kind of like just more people, you wanted to like further explore this kind of style? Like what kind of kept you working in that space?
Demand.
Yeah. Sweet.
When the Opeth video came out, it was eye-opening because it was the first music video I ever did that literally got reviewed online, you know, by all these various sites that I didn't even know existed before. You know, it had premiered on Pitchfork, and that had given it an audience outside of metal. So that sort of generated more of a groundswell, and I started getting asked to do interviews and other things. And then when I did the High on Fire video after that, it was kind of all over because that video, you know, was named best video of the year by a couple places. Revolver made it number one. So those opportunities came in, and the opportunities come from exactly what you show. You know, like you show a heavy metal cartoon, people are going to come to you for the heavy metal cartoon. You have to work within that frame to evolve on your own at that point, which I think I've successfully done. And the budgets we do have are getting better, you know, for our work specifically. So it's been a process, and I'm not – the eureka moment was after probably High on Fire, where that reaction was even bigger than the Opeth reaction was, and I started being sort of talked to deferentially by people who had never talked to me that way before. I realized, oh, shit, I must have done something fucking good because people kind of respect me now. So that became great, and you don't want to – when you reach that point in music videos where you're dealing directly with bands and management – and hardly ever labels, and you are given this creative license, it's a really attractive offer for a filmmaker. Even if you have to, you know, live on rice and beans to do it, it's still a great opportunity to have that kind of freedom. And I'm really excited that I've gotten to that point. I mean, it's hard to maintain, but it's a great place to be.
Well, we're with you on the rice and beans diet. That's the IMVDB official diet as well. It comes in packages in the mail. We just put it in a pot. It's weird. So, Phil, you mentioned that, you know, basically every step of the music video process you had to kind of, like, learn to do and fill in. And I think that, like, you know, for the most part, that's true. And essentially the only thing you don't do on the music videos, Ian does. And so I'm curious when kind of you guys started working together and where that relationship started.
That's me.
Well, you can field that one.
Well,
alternate words.
This is Ian. Yeah. Fuck, shit, fuck. Let's go. Phil, I met Phil auditioning for the short film Far Out. If you haven't checked that out, that's really awesome too. But Phil had made The Listening Dead and they were making another short, kind of those Erie Film Festival had kind of commissioned, you know, to do another short. And I had auditioned for the lead role, and it was a really great experience just even auditioning. I went in. Phil lived in this really cool loft, and he was there with Mike Houck, one of his collaborators at the time. And I went in on like a Saturday and auditioned for them, and it was really relaxed and fun. And although I didn't get the part, and I didn't really feel like I was that great of an audition, I was still kind of just had started acting at that point. I haven't been like really acting that long. I didn't get the part, but I wanted to work with him. So I ended up just doing whatever. I was an extra and built the set and
We made him our slave.
Yeah, I basically was. I was down from that then, down from day one, and then just, you know, continued to work with Phil in different capacities and like photography, and then when the opportunities came about out here, we were just like, wow, let's go, and we were.
Yeah, Ian helped me sell all my photo equipment.
Yeah, it was
make the move to LA.
Yeah, like. Get out of Dodge, and it was actually probably a good time to do it because I don't know. Since we've left New York, there's been like 6 blizzards and 2 hurricanes.
Well, that was like 2008. This is the spring of 2008. So we get to LA, and like global the economy warming. Is tanking. Like everybody, every photo client I'd had, like 90% of them were laid off within the next 3 months of us arriving at LA. And, you know, then my film manager who I just got picked up, she got laid off by the end of 2008. My William Morris agent got laid off at the end of 2008. So he was here when, like, the shit hit the fan and we decided we had to change gears. So Ian and I have been working together from, you know, since the beginning, basically, of me doing film.
And you literally sold all your camera equipment.
Yeah.
I was a photographer in New York. I had a huge space. I had strobes. I had multiple cameras. I had, you know, but I knew that I had signed the contract already on the feature. So I knew there was some income coming, but I knew enough about the film industry to know that I shouldn't count on it anytime soon. So we used the capital of my entire photo business to finance the move to LA and then got here and had nothing.
But it was better to be in LA, and you know, with the weather and everything, it was easier to deal with being
We were poor but tan. Yeah,
right, totally. I'm in New York right now and you guys are making me jealous. It's literally snowing.
90 degrees here yesterday.
Yeah, I hate you guys. so getting into the Torch video a little bit, obviously Phil, it kind of follows along this style that you establish, but it also is kind of completely unique, of course. Where did the kind of concept for this video originate, and where did that all come from?
Well, it was another case of being like the band picked me. So I got the call from Relapse saying, Torch loves your stuff. They really want you to do a video. Here's the track. There's really no direction. You can email Steve back and forth, the lead singer, guitarist. And the only direction was they sent me the album art, actually. And in the inside of the album art is this great illustration by Santos, who does a lot of their stuff. And it showed this world after mankind was gone. And it was very colorful and very playful. But if you looked at it closely, it was all sexual. They were like robotic penises and trees shaped like phalluses. And it was very kind of strange. And I loved it. And I talked to Steve online and he said, you know, it's the premise of the song is there's hardly any lyrics, but the premise is that after mankind has been wiped out by AI, AI starts rebuilding their world. But the cycle of sort of creation and destruction continues. And that was basically all I got from him. So I was like, awesome. Their budget was minuscule. And I talked a great deal with the label to get that up, at least to something that wouldn't be super painful. But Ian and I, after we listened to the song a few times, we're like, we'd be fools not to take on this song because it's so awesome. And it has this, like, it's like two songs. Like, you build up this whole thing at the beginning, and then the second half of the song is just this sonic descent into hell. And I was like, God, this is just too tempting narratively not to tackle it. So thankfully we agreed, you know, like, yeah, let's just do it. Let's get into it. And so I wrote a really quick treatment. I think it was like a page and a half and just a couple of small illustrations that basically showed kind of the opening neighborhood with the buildings that are made out of machines. It looks like suburbia, but it's something else. And I wrote out almost exactly what you see in the video, I think, if you guys agree. I mean, like, it was kind of precisely what we set out to do. And I mean, there were surprises along the way, obviously. And we spent a lot longer in prep on this video than normal because of the design elements that we wanted to incorporate. And, you know, we wanted a really great costume for Elena because we've, you know, been dying to work with her and we wanted it to be really special. And we wanted a killer costume for Ian because we knew that if he had the right outfit, his performance would be amazing. And we could do a lot with just two people and all my digital mojo, my nunchuck skills on the computer. So that was kind of how we approached it. And we also, because we didn't have the money, we couldn't really use a lot of the crew that we normally use. So what we did is we built an army, basically, a small army. But they were fans and friends who were dying to work with us, all very talented artists. And we were like, okay, this is your chance. Come on board on this one. It's not going to be fancy. There will be no catering. We will be shooting the entire video in our two apartments because Ian just got a new place and it wasn't furnished yet. And I'm like, don't buy furniture. Almonds. We did have chocolate covered.
That's all you need.
That made the shoot. That's why it was so great.
So talk about that. Elaine, I know you've worked on other music videos before. How did this one compare? The chocolate-covered almonds obviously goes in the plus category.
I got sold.
Yeah. Is that something you're kind of used to? Like going into empty apartments to shoot music videos? Or is
no,
it...
definitely not. This experience was definitely special. I met Phil at a casting. And I didn't actually get that part, but I really wanted to work with him because usually the way music videos work, you go to a casting, you get your call sheet, you show up on set. And with this, it was really different because we met several times before. He really told me what he wanted. He described his, like, you know, I could definitely see his vision, where a lot of times directors don't really have time or, you know, I mean, they get paid, they do their job, they leave. And same with the actors for the most part. And, a lot of times I get shot as like a very, very pretty girl or sexy. I never get to do really ugly scenes. And as you see, like the beginning of the music video, it's all sexy, you know, sexy costume. A lot of people refer to it as Fifth Element because of all the straps.
Yeah.
But towards the end, like Phil told me, like, listen, this is a death scene. Death isn't pretty. We want you to give it your all. Like, go to the dark side, you know, like, don't try to die all pretty. Not soap opera, you know? And so it was really fun, you know, like I got to really choke and suffocate and die. And for me, it was, you know, in the long run, acting is what I really want to do. And it was fun to play with that. It was fun for like Phil to trust me and, you know, give it my all. And I think that's what made it really different. And we had a really great team. Tomoko was a makeup artist and I worked with her before and she was really great at special effects. Really great at making me really ugly.
Which is difficult. It's very difficult.
And we had Jenny. She was a stylist and she made this amazing costume. Made me feel really sexy. And I think how Phil said, the costume, like Ian's costume, my costume, it's very important to get into character. You know, totally. you really want to feel as, I don't know, like I felt good, you know? And it was an amazing experience. It was definitely really different from any other music video I worked on, but it was almost like a short film. And I loved it. I loved the story. I loved the passion. It's great to work with people that put in so much of their energy and time into a project because it's not common for music videos. It was almost like a film.
Well, that's how we like to look at it. Yeah. I mean, that's how we try to look at it.
And how much time, like what is the time span for the making of this video? How long does it, like, is it, do you get additional time, Phil, like than the normal, like, couple-week turnaround time that most music videos have to work within?
Yeah, I have to. Unless we had, you know, if we were working with enormous budgets, it would be a whole other sort of paradigm. I'd be able to hire a team of people to help me in post. But since we never have that, really, it is what it is. And there is definitely, it's like, the fastest I've turned around anything in post was 2.5 months.
Yeah.
One of the animated narratives. Because it's just it's super time consuming. And that's working 7 days a week, you know.
Right. Nothing else but working on the video.
Over 12 hours a day, easy, every day, to get there. And a lot of times, I mean, lately, though, the last 2 years, bands know that. The ones that have approached us over and over again, they know that. And now they kind of wait. So we just cleared off our waiting list.
And Sorry, continue.
No, I was just saying, like, certain bands, like the video before this, Monster Magnet, they were doing a album that was going to be a remix of the album that came out, so they didn't have, like, they didn't have one of those really brutal deadlines, you know? So they were, like, they waited 4 months for me to be available, and then when I was available, they they upped the budget and gave us as much time as we wanted in post. And that's why that video of our videos came out the most sort of, I'd say, not realistic, but sort of more cinematic looking. We're very detailed backgrounds with a lot of intricacy and a lot of stuff that I wouldn't have time to really compose. The difference in Torch being, you know, it still looks very cinematic, but it's a very simplified sort of treatment of backgrounds. There's a lot of silhouettes and things like that, because that's faster for me to actually design around and do. But the time crunch is kind of an issue, because it means I can't take a lot of jobs in a year,
right? Which
hurts. We're up for one right now. We're the only choice, and it's a huge band and it's a much bigger budget. But the time crunch is really bad. It would be doing the normal process in half the time. But as soon as we're done today, I'm going to work on a budget for that to see how, because it's at a major label. So let's see how much the man is willing to fork over.
Nice. we'll send the IMVDB positive energy towards the man, and hopefully they'll catch that. One thing I just realized, both Ian and Elena said that neither of them got the parts the first time they auditioned for your stuff. Is that something you do on purpose?
Yeah, definitely. That's how I feel like about it.
Like, intentionally says no, like make them want to work with you even more?
No, I never thought about that, but no, but it is. I think casting is one of the most important parts of directing, and I'm not the first director to ever say that, obviously. But you, especially if you're the writer, and if the concept comes from you, then you have people in your mind that you think of, and you might not have met them, but when you see them, you meet them, and you get that characteristic. I love actors, but I don't trust acting. I think people come with who they are. People bring something that either directors are perceptive to, or general people are more perceptive to sometimes. It's a feeling that I get, and it's a thing that I try to foster the kind of relationship with people that I like at casting. If I meet them at a casting and I think they're great but not right for the part, then I definitely try to keep the door open, because I truly believe that even in the work that I do, it's human performance is the most valuable special effect, if you want to call it that, in a music video. It's the thing that really makes it work. Everything I do is just sort of icing on the cake. As far as performance goes, you know, Elena and Ian in the Torch video, you couldn't do it without them. I mean, they made that video what it is. And so it's not deliberate that I meet somebody and I'm like, oh, fuck you. No. Maybe Elena a little bit, because she's so hot, you know? You can't be nice to the pretty girls because they won't respect you.
That's what it is.
That's a good point.
I definitely think things happen for a reason. As much as I wanted to be a part of the first video, I'd much rather be a part of this video.
I think this one's a better one for you.
Yeah, definitely. I watched the other video and I think the other girl was more appropriate for the part.
It was more.
Yeah, we were thinking of, too, just to clue Doug in here, we were thinking, we actually submitted Elena as the secretary in the Duke video.
Oh, okay.
With only Chloe as the alternate, and it was literally the band, Dave Windorf of Monster Magnet, who said, you know what, man, I love them both, but Elena is just so fucking smoking that I don't think I think she's going to compete too much with Cat David. And she's young and she's gorgeous, and like, I don't want to, I'm like, yeah, but you want to see them make out, don't you?
Next on the list is porn, right, for you?
But no.
Animated porn.
Yeah, it's a cartoon. It's okay.
Right.
So that was, and in the end, I think he was kind of right, because Chloe did look older. She looked more of like a woman. She had those big eyes that, I mean, Elena has them too, but I mean, the very emotive eyes. And it worked out okay, but as soon as this project came along and I realized that I was going to take on kind of the idea of the babe in sci-fi and try to make a statement about like our expectations and how we objectify these beautiful women, that Elena was perfect. And Elena's also super smart, and I knew that if I explained the idea to her, that she could bring something to the performance that would really be personal and real and that she would embrace it intellectually, not just as an actor who kind of follows whatever you ask them to do. Because that's something I appreciate a lot in actors, is if I can find the actors who are super engaged in the ideas, I want to work with them because there's a shorthand that we can have. I'm not so much of a impulsive, passionate sort of director on set. I'm very methodical, and I talk about exactly what we want to do and how I want it to be. So to have that communication with a performer is rare. And so when I find those actors, I definitely keep a little list of when I'm going to, these are the people I want to work with. When do I get to work with them? What's the right project? And I think of projects for people. So, after the casting with Elena, I would think of things for her. Any project that came up, I try to think of what would be a good part for her, or, and the same thing with Ian, because Ian's kind of a part of everything now, and he's ingrained in the work. So it's good to have those relationships, is all I'm saying. And sometimes it does take a few castings.
Yeah, sure.
But I think what was different about this project is we were all friends, and it's a relaxed atmosphere. And when you click with people, I don't know, you don't get, what is the word I'm looking for?
Tense, nervous?
Yeah, you're yourself. Stress. You're natural. You're organic. You don't have to, fake anything. And those moments really come out on video. When you're natural and you're yourself, when you have, inside jokes, or I think that really helps with the performance.
Well, and also on our sets, we never have any suits. We don't have, there's no label guy, manager kind of looking over our shoulder.
Right.
So we feel like we're kind of being watched. So there is a relaxed atmosphere that I think that helps actors.
And 100%.
Elena and Ian agree. So that's kind of how we roll. And it's easy when it's just, literally Elena's shoot was us, Elena, makeup artist, and Jenny, Tomoko and Jenny. It was like five people.
And almonds.
And the chocolate covered almonds. And I'm curious, you talked a little bit about the suffocation scene before, and there's something about that scene that's just really, really jarring and it's kind of unexpected, and you want so badly for something to get figured out where she stops dying, because you just lock in on it for a lot of it, and it's fantastic. But I'm curious, was that scene kind of inspired by anything? Was there anything specifically that you were looking to emulate? Did you look what the suffocation actually looks like, or was it was there a stylistic choice there?
Well, Phil sent me references. He was like, I want this to be real. It's not a pretty scene. When people imagine, if you're really suffocating, if you're really dying, nobody dies pretty in real life. And he sent me references. He's like, listen, I want you to do this for real. Here's, watch these videos. This is how people suffocate. And I was like, okay, let me try this. And we practiced it a couple of times. And, when you're in the moment, when you're in costume, you're already... everything helps. The makeup helps. It makes it feel more natural. The costume, Ian kind of killing me. when you're in the moment, everything helps. You're not pretending. You're actually at one moment I felt like I was actually going to suffocate because I was
Yeah, and I cut that scene. It was so good. What Elena was doing was so good. It ran beyond the end of the song. Because I cut it and I'm like, oh, let's just turn the knife. Let's just make this so painful for people to watch.
Right.
Because she it was believable. And and those big blue eyes just sort of looking at you pleadingly, what is going on? I mean, there's just so much horror in that scene that it was really, my only the references I sent her, by the way, was the scene in Antichrist where Willem Dafoe chokes out his wife, some alien scenes where the chest bursters come out and people are convulsing, things like that. But no, it was definitely a deliberate thing. The reference didn't come from anything specific in terms of the concept for the video.
Mm-hmm.
The entire video concept is an adaptation of what the song was about, and an idea I've written a script about before, which took place in a similar sort of scenario, a very toxic future world where we just fucked it all up and you can't breathe outside and people don't know it. And, until the first one goes. And that was kind of the inspiration, where you take something beautiful and precious and we know life-giving in this environment, this may be the last woman on Earth, the last chance humanity has. So in an analogy way, she, her death is the death of the species, is the death of kind of Earth for Humans. It's, you know, and discovering her in the video may mean the death for the AI as well, who, you know, can't handle it, obviously.
Right. So now I want to get into the art of the AI, the robots, the artificial intelligence. First of all, let's just like get this on record. That's all of those are Ian, right? That's Ian. Yeah. And so can we talk about how that was just initially achieved? Like how many different kind of like characters would you say you played in this video, Ian?
Huh. Well, it was over probably 4 to 5 shoot days, I would think, at least. You know, probably 4 or 5, right?
Of the drone, probably 5. At, yeah, 5.
We call it the drone. So
are you guys getting arrested, by the way, right now? Is it?
It's not snowing here, so the windows are open.
Okay, no, it's cool. I'm just...
It's too hot in California.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Sorry to cut you off.
No, it's cool. But yeah, like about 5 days, separate days of shooting, like, you know, getting things in the timeline and Phil knowing what he needed and that type of thing. And then, you know, just shooting each guy in a different angle and getting, you know, all the coverage we needed for each angle, really. I mean, it's all this, obviously all the same costume and all me and, you know, just working on the movements and angles for each shot. So Phil could composite everything.
Yeah. I mean, the first step was like figuring out the way that we would pull off the robot, you know, a guy in a leotard that does not act like a robot generally. So Ian came up with this movement that he could do that was very deliberate, and he would do these pops on every, you know, it was kind of like Pop and Lock meets the robot. And we filmed test footage of that and then took it into the computer and sped it up to a real time because he would do them very slow and deliberately. And the look was fantastic. People think that we stop motion animated Ian. Other filmmakers have asked, did you do that? Did you stop motion animate him? It's like, that's a lot easier than that, actually. And you know, I had to obviously storyboard the hell out of this because of how we were going to shoot it. If Ian's going to be every guy,
right?
Like the scene where he rips the other guy's arm off was the most complicated to actually block. I got stormtroopers on eBay to actually block out the scene on a little green screen set to figure out how I would do it, who's going to go where, what was the situation going to be, because it's like action choreography, but with one guy.
Right.
Which is challenging.
Who's only got two arms.
He's only got two arms. Yeah. And we had to actually have the costume guys, Snakebite and Sammy, make us, take an arm off the mannequin we were using and do an extra design, an extra arm for us that we could put on it to get ripped off. But Ian also did the stop motion on the other robots. So he's kind of all the robots.
Right.
In a way.
Did you say the costume guy's name is Snakebite?
Snakebite Cortez.
That's fantastic. That's the coolest thing. And he made all the costumes for the video?
No, he and his girlfriend, Sammy Tattoo, did the drone helmet, the drone body, and the big blaster that the drone carries. Elena's costume was by Jenny Luna. It was her only task was making that costume.
Right.
She did a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah, the costume is amazing. Have you worn it since the video, Elena?
I wish. I think I might myself for Halloween this year.
Yeah, that would be sweet.
Who are you? I'm like, I'm the last woman on Earth.
Right.
She'll need armed bodyguards.
And everybody was referring to Fifth Element. And I don't think that's like what we were trying to go for, but that's how it came out. We wanted it to be sexy, but cover all the main parts, you know?
Yeah, we wanted it to be like the sight of the skin. We wanted like the sight of Elena to be in the video, this like, you know, this moment where it's like everything's red and black and destroyed and on fire, and then there's this beautiful blonde, you know, in this blue sort of. Creating that sort of contrast was really key, and her skin, seeing skin, was I thought a very important element. So, hold on, wait for the fire truck.
Yeah, that's fine.
Getting arrested again.
Yeah, it's cool.
Stop selling drugs. So it wasn't a deliberate, like, let's rip off the Fifth Element. It was just like, looking at things. Obviously, that's in my head. You know, there's, you know, it's one of those things that's just in your head and influence.
Yeah.
And I did show it to Jenny, but both Jenny and I agreed that the costume that's actually in the Fifth Element, when you see her out of sort of the regeneration tube and she's standing there, it's very, it totally boys out a girl's body. It kind of like, there's a flat, you know, strap across the boobs, pressing them way down. There's like, it distorts kind of the aspect of a woman a little bit. And we wanted to go a different way. We wanted to make it a lot more sort of sinewy and sort of wrapping around, and it looks like it's kind of bandages. It looks like it's kind of medical or might have some purpose, but not really.
But it's also all one piece. Like, I could not get out of it on my own. I could not put on, like, put it on my own. So
yeah, it was tricky to get in and out of it.
Does it have zippers, or is it just kind of like you?
It was literally stitched on me the day of.
So it was like just like an unfinished costume, and then is it functional?
Yeah, well, it had to be tight so I could move in it. Because
right.
When it was dying, so it couldn't fall off. So she couldn't pin it without it being on me. So literally the whole day I was like, okay.
Yeah, it had to fit really tight to Elena, like, on the day that we were shooting. Because we had done, what, like, two fittings?
Two or three.
We kept trying things with the costume to make it work.
It was redone twice.
Yeah, so it was a tricky thing. But in the end... one of the things that Jenny and I, when we were talking about it after the last sort of casting, was we had a problem with the costume because it didn't have any anchors. It was all fabric connected to fabric, and the idea came up to use the silver rings on it, which actually made it kind of even more cool and retro. But that gave it sort of anchors in the design to allow her to create all those great little straps going around all the nice parts.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize how much work went into this video, even beforehand, before the actual filming day. Everybody, so many times we met up and talked about it. It was literally the most
we started pre-production almost a month before the shoot with Elena, which is the sort of the main
one. And we
one.
Had to postpone the date of the shoot because the costume wasn't ready.
Yeah, we had to do that too. But let's not talk.
Yeah.
I'm the only guy. Everybody's like, "Oh yeah, cool. We could do it later. That's no problem." Meanwhile, I'm thinking, "There goes another week of post."
Right. Well, at least you didn't have to re-rent another location, right? Because you just shot in your home.
No, there is sort of a simplicity and it's kind of an awesomeness to shooting that way. But it's also a lot harder and a lot slower. You get to shoot more days, as many days as you want, but each day you don't get as much accomplished as if you had a crew, you know, or
right.
even a camera or even an assistant cameraman or my co-DP, Jeff Speed, you know. But we didn't we literally had no money to pay anybody to really help us other than the people who did. So
right.
It's amazing what were the props, because they're a miniature, you know, the tube that I'm in, and you actually look at it and it's tiny, but in the video it looks huge and I fit into it.
So everything we're looking at essentially is that isn't like in somebody's hand or on somebody's body is like a miniature for the most part.
Yeah. Yep.
Nice.
I mean, there's photography used in the backgrounds, obviously.
So, right.
Stock photography and stuff that I shot separately, but there, all the technology is miniatures that we had this guy Jeff Soderbergh do for us. He did a great job.
And just going back to the. To the robots, to the AI guys, real quick. Ian, would you say that you were kind of like, did any of the characters have like a different personality, or was there like a kind of an overall singular personality that you thought all of these characters would be taking on?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think we just went from it as they're all robots. They're all, you know, the same thing more or less. And obviously there's certain in the narrative, there's one that is kind of the lead, but not for any other reason other than he's the one that had the blaster and then just got to her first, kind of, I think. You know, it wasn't really a thought of like, this one's different. They're all.
No, I think in my mind too, it was that they were all kind of extensions of the same AI. They were like the cells of this organism.
Yeah.
And that's why when their eye color changes, the sort of TV masters are alerted because they're on the same circuit or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was sort of the discovery of this untouched human woman that was the thing that would split them, that would start splitting them, you know, that would drive a wedge in between them.
And Ian, where would you rank this character, these characters, on your scale of Phil Mucci music video characters that you've had them play?
I love this one. I mean, I love this video. I think as we, you know, it's the, like I've heard this before, each one is my favorite. Each new one is my favorite. So, you know, when we did High on Fire, I'm like a couple of small characters. I'm like one of the crow beasts. I'm a Roman soldier, Devil's Orchard. I'm like the devil, one of the, you know, multiple characters in almost everything. And so they're all my favorite. I love the Pig Destroyer. I mean, that people get a lot of, people always, they're like, wow, you're fucking crazy. And they all think I'm from Sam from The Whitest Kids You Know, I guess. Every comment is like 3 years later. Is that Sam from The Whitest Kids You Know? It's like, you can look it up. It's really easy.
Right.
Ooh. Or they think you're the singer of Fugazi.
Yeah. Or is that Ian MacKay from Fugazi? It's like, no. It's clearly not.
I love the voice you give internet commenters. That is definitely definitely the voice they have.
They're zany. They're zany.
They are zany guys.
Internet commenters. But no, I mean, this one's currently my favorite. I mean,
I think this is kind of Ian's crowning achievement, because you get anything that you get from that robot, any understanding you get, you're looking at an inanimate mask that comes to life because Ian's wearing it. You know, to me, not to brown nose or kiss ass, but it is.
Keep going.
No, to me, when I was editing it and putting it together, I even sent, you know, I sent an email to both of them. I was like, holy shit, your footage is fucking amazing. You're awesome. I love you. You're the best. This is awesome. You know, because I got really excited breaking it down. Like, holy shit, it's going to work. It's going to work. Because I go in terrified every time. Like, holy shit, I hope I got it. Is this going to fucking work? Mm-hmm. And it was working. And so I got really excited. And Ian saw kind of a green screen cut. And he was like, oh, yeah, and we should shoot this part. And we should shoot that part. So when your lead performer is that engaged in the project as a whole, it's the best thing possible. And I think the results speak for themselves. I hope they do. I hope some people think it's a miniature robot puppet that we animated. And I'm just like, no, it's not. Jesus Christ, it's Ian. It says starring Ian Mackie.
Right? And just a little, like if you were to listen to the footage, in order for me to make like movements, I had to kind of make the sounds of my mouth. So if you're listening to the footage, the raw footage, I'm like, like to move my head, because I kind of needed the timing of that noise and the, I don't know if it's, that's not really method, I guess.
Yeah, right.
In a way.
You guys need to do one of those musicless music videos with that.
Yeah, right, and just play the sound. Yeah, that's pretty.
I needed to be a robot to be a robot. So.
He did it every shot.
Oh, you gotta send me some raw footage. I gotta see that.
We got him dancing to a hip hop tune as the robot, which I gotta find that footage and get that up too, because it's hilarious.
You should have like some bloopers.
Mm.
Yeah,
sure. Totally.
Amazing.
Yeah, totally. Cool. Well, before we get into talking about some other cool videos that you guys brought to us to talk about, we do have we do give Adam Alexander a chance to ask a question. So Adam, you had one saved up that you wanted to ask, and now is your chance.
Yeah, Phil, I'm a huge horror fan, and you mentioned a few films that haven't inspired this video. I'm just wondering, are there some horror movies or some books or cartoons that you'd say have inspired like your career, your aesthetic, and all that stuff going forward?
Oh, yeah, I mean, totally. I think now that at the age that I'm at, I don't necessarily look back and specifically say, okay, now I'm going to make this piece that's inspired by this movie. It's all just kind of mush now. It's all kind of just in the pot percolating. So sometimes I don't realize where it came from. I'm sure that's true with everybody. But the ones that I know have affected me a lot throughout my career, I think, you know, Dario Argento's Suspiria is probably one of the bigger influences for me, just in terms of color, tone, the use of music in kind of horror. That's a huge influence, more so I think than I'm conscious of a lot of the time. And the work of Mario Bava, that Italian director as well, I've talked about him in a lot of interviews, but the way he approached filmmaking is a lot like how I do it, in that he started off as an effects guy, and as he became a director, he did a lot of in-camera effects. He was able to pull off some really incredible stuff on low budgets, and he was an amazing sort of lighting guy too. He was just a real inspiration. His films, Black Sunday and Danger Diabolic, and there's so many of them. They're just really beautiful to look at, and they take horror to a different level than what's the modern horror. A lot of it is just gore and splatter, you know, and it's about shocking people with extremes. Whereas I'm more into kind of the vintage stuff, that there is a beautiful and artistic aesthetic to the horror, whether it's gothic or whether it's sort of postmodern, which I would consider, Dario Argento's Suspiria is kind of a postmodern piece of art, I think, as a film. It's sort of film art, because I defy anybody to tell me what the hell that movie's about. I mean, you could say vaguely what it's about, but the story, I mean, it defies sort of logic, but it works. I mean, you watch a girl arrive at an airport in the opening titles, and for no reason at all, you're totally fucking terrified. You have no reason to be scared for this girl, but you are, because of the music, because of the lighting, because of the way it's paced, because there's no dialogue, you know. A lot of things in that movie relate, I think, almost directly to music videos and dark music videos. And I guess the last one I would rattle off would be probably the work of, like, European, what they sort of define as Eurosleaze directors, like Jean Rahon in France and Jess Franco, who worked all over the place. But Jess Franco's movies with Soledad Miranda, the doomed sort of actress that he had for a while, like Vampiros Lesbos, She Killed in Ecstasy, Eugenie de Sade, those movies really kind of, they touched me because they're not great movies by themselves, but when you realize how they were made and you watch the movies, you realize the purity of film, where if you have the right person in front of the lens and the right location and the right music jamming away, I mean, you can make things really engaging with very little money. And so those, I definitely pull a lot of inspiration from filmmakers like that.
Would you like to take another stab at feature films? You've got a few shorts under your belt. Is that something you're going to explore?
Yeah, I mean, this is the constant question. I always hate how I kind of come off on this, but you know, I kind of ran the laps on that for a while, and you know, to reduce it to the simplest explanation, I'm not independently wealthy enough to pursue a feature film on the terms that I want to make one. I've been engaged plenty of times in development projects, and you just run out your own money getting paid nothing to work on projects for other people, improving projects for other people, who once you can't afford to develop it anymore, they just go on to the next person. I mean, that's happened to me more than once. And I'm just not down with that. You know, I think that there's a lot of stuff in the systems, both all the filmmaking sort of paradigms in LA are old, and they're not really kind of updating how things can be done now. And they don't really take into account sort of the new media sort of aspect of life. So I want to make films, but I want to make them on my own terms, with my own crew, with my own people, with these two right here, you know, and do it that way, rather than get the script from somebody else that's really below standard of what I want to do and try to fix it and then, you know, have nothing happen with it. I really want to be more in control, and doing videos the way that we're doing them is building, not a huge audience, but we are building an audience of people who are looking forward to the work, who are engaged in kind of knowing what's happening beforehand, afterwards. And that's great. I mean, that's kind of the modern way. It's like you build it and they will come sort of thing online. And I don't know where that's going to go or how it's going to end up, but a lot of people are having success sort of crowdsourcing, and that might be something that we look into later. Or even, I think TV is better than it's ever been too, and I don't think there's anything wrong with doing serialized stories as well. So there's a lot of things we're thinking of, but right now it's just not. I kind of spent all that energy, and I'm not really looking forward. I get so much more out of doing the videos that I'm not writing off movies, but it's not number one priority. I'm definitely going to happen though.
It's pretty remarkable that like to have been able to find a place in music videos where you can make your ideas the way you want to make them. Like, not a lot of directors in music videos even get that opportunity. So,
oh, I know. I feel fortunate. It's also a little bit of a curse, but it's a great place to be. It's the happiest I've been since I've been in LA, to be honest.
Nice. Even with the rice and beans, but that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I as a photographer, not to sound like a dick, but I made a shit ton of money as a photographer. I could have kept doing that forever and been wealthy. But there's something about doing advertising and corporate work that just started eating away at me. I think it wasn't satisfying. It wasn't enough for me. So, and it came out, it hurt my life, kind of going after chasing the money was not the way I was meant to kind of do the stuff that I do. So I'm okay being poor as long as I get to do what I enjoy doing. That's much more important to me. And I think the work, what people respond to in the work, I think is that passion that I give a shit, or that we give a shit who are making it, you know what I mean? And we're doing it kind of in a crazy way that nobody else is really, you know, doing that much. So that to me is, you know, is singular, and it's where I am, and I'm happy with that, you know, and I think it can just grow from here.
And there's like an evil authoritarian element in a lot of your videos. Would you say some of that draws from your time as a photographer in the corporate world?
I would say definitely. I have definitely a huge subversive streak. I'm very anti-establishment in almost every way. and that is something that part of me is in all the videos. And we actually, we turn down more videos than we do. And sometimes we turn them down purely for the lyrical content, or that this song is not us, or this is not saying what we would say, so we don't want to do it. And, you know, that bites us in the ass too, because then we'll get a song with no money that's awesome, and we'll be like, well, we have to. You know, just like, we have to, from an artistic standpoint, how can we turn this down?
Right.
You know, so there, you know, it's the double-edged sort of integrity, quote-unquote integrity.
Well, cool. I guess that's a good moment to now switch to some other chats that we all hate the authorities in our life, and we can band together with that. If anyone listening wants to see this music video, you can go to imvdb.com/podcast. There'll be a list to the Torch music video. There'll be a list to Phil, Ian, and Elena's pages on IMVDB, which are complete-ish. We're working to get them super complete, but they're getting there, and you can see some of the other work that they've done. But yeah, to kind of wrap up the show, guys, I know that there was a handful of music videos that you guys weren't necessarily involved with, but you thought were pretty sweet, and I'd like to talk about those, if we could. You guys down for that?
Sure.
Sweet. I think it'd be cool to start with the Royal Blood video. How do you feel about that? The David Wilson Out of the Black video. Why'd you decide to bring this video up?
These two guys didn't see that one. Okay. that one I brought up because I really loved, how they integrated the live action and animation, how they tried to make the cuts between them.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was great. I thought the energy of the animation was awesome and electric and really cool. And it's a great song. So you have those elements. I thought the only thing I wanted it to be about more, but you know, it was so well done for what it was. I showed it to my friend Adam Aleka, who's another great sort of animator, director guy, and he loved it too. And we were just really impressed because it looked like it was made for a larger budget than we would normally have on something like that. So I was kind of relishing it, you know, especially kind of reading up on the credits and how many animators they got to use. And I mean, that stuff is very attractive to me. Just as a guy who has to sit in his apartment doing this stuff constantly.
Totally.
You know, just to be like, wow, if I had that many people, I could probably go out to dinner twice a week.
Right. Yeah, it's a great video. This is directed by David Wilson and Christy Carcass. Man, I suck at names.
She's like Adult Swim, I think, right?
It's actually a dude. He is the creator of Super Jail. If you've ever seen, It's like you could see those. So basically, like the concept we've talked about the video on the podcast, this video on This Week in Music videos in the past. But yeah, like basically, it's kind of like a killer bunny mascot. Just kind of like wreaking havoc on a gas station, killing police officers, and it's kind of switches back and forth from animation to live action, and this is definitely one of my favorite videos of 2015 so far. It is really, really strong video. What's some of the ones that everybody's watched? Let's talk about one of those. Is there one on the list that the whole crew has watched?
Can we list all the ones we're in?
Yeah,
I work on music videos. I don't watch them.
Okay. So is that difficult? Would you say like to kind of, is that the kind of the case for all of you guys? Is like you don't watch a lot of music videos because you're working on them so much?
Honestly, like if I'm working with a director, I will check out their work just to be familiar with their, you know, like, but I feel nowadays you listen to the radio, you listen to iTunes. I think back in the day when they used to play music videos on MTV, I would watch them, but now it's like a whole process. You have to go online, you have to log into YouTube. You have to really be passionate about the artist
She's really freaking busy. Let's just
Yeah, no, totally. But it's definitely a conscious thing now, right? Like it's a thing where you
I think you really have to respect the artist and follow their work to watch, you know, their videos. But if I'm cast in a project, I will check out the director's work, I will check out the artist's work.
She's a workaholic.
Kind of, yeah. So out of respect for the people I work with, I check out their work. But I wouldn't say that there's somebody who I'm like constantly following and looking into music videos.
I mean, yeah, music. I growing up in the 80s and the 90s and having MTV on all the time, I've watched, you know, thousands and thousands upon thousands of music videos. And I totally respect the medium and everything and definitely watch videos. But, there's just so many. I mean, there's so many good videos. Like they say that there's not good videos being made because there's no MTV and stuff, and I think we make amazing videos and there's a lot of really great videos still being made. There's so many outlets for them to be viewed and they're everywhere. So I love all of Gondry's videos over the years. I mean, those are all fantastic. And I love hip hop.
Yeah, I mean, that's one, Let Forever Be, maybe the one where he does the kind of like kaleidoscopic.
Gondry, yeah, I mean, he's great. I mean, of course, I mean, that's, but, you know, and Yo MTV Raps growing up, I used to watch tons of, I love hip hop, so I love tons of like old rap videos and stuff are great to watch. But
all the stuff with the low camera angles, people, rap hands at the lens, I dig it.
There's so many good videos.
Totally.
So many good
videos. Yeah, I agree with Ian. Like, I think we're in a renaissance of, like, music videos. I think the fact that we don't have broadcasts has opened up the doors creatively what we can do. So we don't have those limitations. We don't have to make sure that we're not strobing or we're not, you know, we don't have any violence. There's nobody holding a gun. There's, you know, even nudity and sex and all that stuff is now kind of open. And for now, it's probably going to close again, but I'm constantly, what I do is I just go, I'm working all the time. So it's really hard. And when I'm working on a video, I'm kind of really exclusive to my video a little bit. I kind of get in a hole and I'm mostly listening to that song and I'm mostly, you know, I'll break off and I go for walks every morning and I'll listen to other music to clear my head, but I'm mostly focusing on that video visually and I'm listening to other stuff or or just playing, like, you know, the X-Files series on in the corner of my computer just over and over, just like just something to keep me company while I'm actually hammering out the work. And I don't want to get diverted and watch stuff. But I do at the end of the year, and I go over, you know, the IMDb lists. I go over the Pitchfork. I go over all the sites' kind of lists of the top videos, and I try to check those out.
Totally.
Here, just to see what people are up to and what kind of has been called. I felt like last year was a little bit, like, all the lists were identical last year, so it was a little bit disappointing in that regard. But because I think there's so much that's out there that's not even being looked at or talked about. I feel lucky as somebody who does mostly metal that my stuff gets talked about at all, to be honest. So that's, you know, encouraging. But I think there's so much other great stuff that's out there that is just, you know, really, really taking strong steps towards, you know, what the medium can do and where we can go with it. I mean, we're obviously taking a certain path. We're making kind of short films. You know, there's no band. There's definitely a narrative, you know, that sort of, but that's only one small aspect of the music video sort of palette now. It's getting so much broader and bigger. I hope that it's going to kind of come back around to where they do start putting more of the money into them, and they do start sort of, because we've seen how marketing is changing too. Like, the way the Torch album was marketed was really unique, and they hired a publicist to do it at the labels. One of the reasons we signed on was this publicist had brought a lot of great projects out into the public, and they kind of slowly trickled out song after song, and then they did a video game, and the way they kind of did it was really taking advantage of new media and how it can be, you know, sort of marshaled to build this momentum behind an album release. So it's been interesting. I think it's going to change, but I'm really looking forward to how it develops, because I think there's great, great art being made all over the place now.
And I will say that the top 10 lists were similar-ish. There were a few undeniable ones that kind of got stuffed at the top of everyone's list, but I think the IMDb list, pretty unique. Those are just my thoughts.
Well, you're stronger.
Yeah, right, exactly, right. But fuck it. There are no rules here. We don't have to stick to that format that we were doing before. We don't have to talk about any more of these music videos, because this show was fun without it. And so...
well, we got three people, so...
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally, and it was a lot of fun. So we tried, and we that stuff didn't work, but I think everything else is...
Sorry! We just like to talk about ourselves.
No, I mean, you were invited on to do that, so I think that makes sense. No, that was fun either way. So, again, folks that are listening, if you go to imvdb.com/podcast, you will see episode 3 of the Music Video Chats podcast there. You can see all of the links to the videos that we talked about and the people we talked about. Everyone's Twitter account will be there, so you can follow away and you can see the videos they worked on imvdb.com. And everyone, thank you so much for joining us. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Sweet. And we'll see everybody in a couple of weeks. Must be the money. If you wanna go